Next up is the orchestral suite number 4, also in D. There is a complicated explanation as to why these orchestral suites that have a lot of brass instruments in them were often in D major in the 1700s. It had to do with the people who were brass players at that time. You see, getting flats and sharps with all trumpets and horns was tricky, so they used to make these instruments already have either a couple of flats built in, like the trumpets of today, or a couple of sharps built in. For instance, when the clarinet was first invented, there were two, one in A, which had three sharps built in, and one in B flat, which had two flats built in. So a clarinet player would buy one of each, and now if he was given some music in B flat, which had two flats in the music, he would just use the B flat clarinet, and there would be absolutely no flats as long as he stayed in B flat. If the tune made a visit to F major, oops, he would have to play a sharp. If he had a piece in E major, he would use the other clarinet and would only have to play one sharp all the time, namely F sharp, which would actually sound like a D sharp because the clarinet was made that way. There was a trumpet in D in the time of Bach, and a trumpet in B flat, and a trumpet in C. Some of these are still made today, and Baroque experts buy them at incredibly expensive prices. Nowadays, of course, a good brass player can play any sharp or flat if he or she had to. Unfortunately, because most trumpets, for instance, are in B flat, trumpet players have to learn to play extra sharps to compensate. Trombones and tubas, I understand, are all in C. That is, no built-in flats or sharps in the design. One day I'm going to tell you about how trumpets and horns of Bach's time could only play a very few notes, and when the voice or the part went outside those few, the composer would have to assign an oboe or a bassoon to take over the voice. Now here's a bit of the opening movement of the orchestral suite number 4, and then I'll take you right into the finale, designated réjouissance, which I'm guessing means something like rejoicing in French. Yeah, the royal families of Europe had this affectation of speaking in French, so they made their court composers label all the movements in French, but the speeds were indicated in Italian because the composers of that era were often Italian, and somehow the names took hold. I used to get really mad at all these foreign words, but now I relax and say them as well as I can. Okay, that was the opening bars, and now the finale. Thank you. let's advance the clock about 40 years to the time of Mozart. By this time, the symphony had been invented, and Mozart wrote his great symphony in C major, the last one, called the Jupiter Symphony. I'll play a few bars of the first movement, which is often what most people remember the symphony by, and then the finale, the fourth and last movement. This is a composer's symphony. In other words, its good points are deep and subtle, but there's something for everyone, even if it's not immediately a very catchy and tuneful. Okay, now the finale, the fourth movement. Thank you. That's the opening to Handel's Water Music, at least one of Handel's Water Music suites. There are actually three, and this is the one that's best known. And now I'll go to what functions as the finale of that one, which is the alla hornpipe, and that's basically the end of the Water Music Suite in D. That's the Fifth Symphony of Beethoven, and now we have the finale. But the problem is that the finale goes on forever, so I'm just going to play enough just to close out the first hour, and then I'll play my silly little march that we always play at that spot, and then on the other side we'll play some more fun stuff.